Legoland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us on the new episode of the Calcioland podcast. So today we are going to cover a little bit the Champions League final. We have some fantastic guests to get both the Liverpool and Real Madrid perspective. But since we do cover Serie A, I did ask them some questions that tie into our favorite league. I think you'll really enjoy that and get a better sense of what we can expect in the final. We're going to name our winners and losers for the entire season in Serie A, and we're going to get to your fantastic Twitter questions. I am not surprised that almost all of them are on transfers because it's that time of year, so we're looking forward to that. But we'd be remiss not to start with the incredible news of Carletto Ancelotti becoming Napoli's new manager. It was very surprising. I even saw my boss, Di Marzio, gave credit to the people that have been talking about this the previous few days. And even he said himself he was very surprised by this. So if he's surprised, if you're surprised as well, don't feel bad. So Alex, I'm joined, but you guys, I think, know him by now as the leader of the Conte Out Brigade. I know him as the producer and co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. So let me ask you, Alex, first, what is your reaction to this news?
Yeah, I'm pretty surprised that it's Carlo. Am I surprised that Napoli is moving on to a new manager? Well, no, because I must have not been listening to our own episodes recently. But yeah, being Carlo Ancelotti, I'm pretty surprised. But right when that kind of happened in my head and I thought about it for a little while longer, I don't know, kind of makes sense to me in terms of Napoli does not want to go away yet. They want stability. Yeah. And if there's a manager that's respected and can bring stability to a club, it's Carlo Ancelotti. He's obviously managed in Serie A before. He's so well respected. He's a very balanced manager, in my opinion. Maybe others who know him even better would say he's not. But at least from knowing him at Chelsea and knowing him at Bayern and even way back at Milan, I think he's just a very well-rounded manager. And we've talked about it a lot on the pod. In terms of next year, who will rival Juve? And you've now mentioned, David, that Roma may be the team to rival Juve. Well, I think Napoli's starting to get worried, or they were starting to get worried. Oh, crap. If we don't hold on to Sarri and continue the Sarri ball and be the most offensive, high-powered team in the league, what's our identity going to be? And when you're a little bit unsure about what your identity is going to be, bring in Carlo Ancelotti. I think he brings so much respectability to a team. So for me, it just says Napoli is not ready to back down yet. Napoli still wants to be up there with Juve and anybody else who wants to challenge for the Scudetto. And if a couple things go their way, Juve maybe runs into a bad season next year. Carlo Ancelotti is a good enough manager to win Napoli a Scudetto if they keep a lot of that talent and personnel intact. So, yeah, I was surprised, but once I thought about it for a while, it actually kind of makes sense to me. So that was my take, David. What about you?
So my first take on this is, to me, this really says more about Napoli than anything else. I think you got to give a lot of credit to their president, De Laurentiis. We'll get into it a little bit more with the questions. But look, originally his plan was to bring back Sarri. The city really embraced Sarri. We all know about the great football, the 91 points, the highest point total in Serie A without winning the title. But when you look, if you're familiar with the story of De Laurentiis taking over Napoli, this is really a crowning achievement for him in a lot of ways. For those of you that aren't that familiar, Napoli had gone bankrupt in like 2003. They had to start over again from the third division. De Laurentiis, who's a movie producer, bought the club back in 2004, got them back to Serie A. I think he's done a really good job as far as talent, bringing in players. A big moment was when he hired Rafa Benitez, who, again, if you think about the fact that in 2004, Napoli barely even existed, to have a name like Rafa Benitez was a huge moment. Gonzalo Higuain, of course, coming from Real Madrid, a huge moment as well. But then, you know, Sarri, you know, wasn't, you know, he was looking for a sexy name like Klopp to come in, lucked into Sarri as a backup option, and it ended up working really well. But I think, you know, hiring someone like Ancelotti is such a sexy name. It's just incredible for the Napoli brand. They're getting talked about all over the world. So good for them. So that's my first reaction. As far as on the Ancelotti side of things, this is very interesting because we've seen, and this was even before Milan's new ownership, they had tried to bring him back. The Italian Federation wanted to give him the Italy job. They tried. I think they came fairly close to hiring him, but then he ended up deciding to take the Napoli job. Now, I will tell you, obviously he's a great manager, but Napoli really is a peculiar place. I think, you know, a lot of the reasons why people don't particularly like Napoli president De Laurentiis and Sarri is how abrasive they are in their statements and how much they complain. But this is really a reflection of the city and how it operates. Like, the city really responds to those sorts of things. You know, Napoli is a city that gets a lot of crap from the rest of Italy, and they have someone that, you know, stands up to them and fights back. Now, Ancelotti is a great guy, maybe doesn't really have that in him. You mentioned that, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see what they're going to do in the transfer market, and we're slowly starting to get some hints on what will look like, but I wouldn't be surprised if some of the players that were, you know, really Sarri's boys decide to move on a little bit. So I think it's going to be a transition for Napoli, but when you have someone like Ancelotti, they are going to have to raise the bar. So if some big-name players leave, I would expect Napoli to reinvest. The other thing that I want to say about De Laurentiis' journey is, like, you know, again, you can criticize his statements. Like, I totally get that. But I really believe Serie A needs more presidents like him. Like, Napoli has been very successful. They have the longest streaks of qualification to European competitions in Serie A. And okay, you want to make fun of that. You want to say that's a title, that's a made up title. Maybe it is, but that says a lot. Even more, longer than Juve, they've been qualifying for Europe. Juve had those 2 years where they really struggled. So I think, you know, we could use more presidents like De Laurentiis, who's just fiscally responsible. Napoli's never had FFP issues, and the team's very competitive. So I'm curious to see what happens in the next stage with them. And one of the reasons that I say we need more presidents like De Laurentiis is, unfortunately, the news that we've seen on Milan in the past few days. I've been getting a lot of questions from people on this. You know, we really need to see what the next ruling of UEFA is going to be once it goes to the court. But, you know, the one thing that I'll tell you is my first reaction was, like, you know, maybe the people that had doubts on this whole sale of the team, there were such obvious red flags from Jump Street. You know, maybe those people deserved a little bit more respect. And I think specifically Roma president Pallotta, who got so heavily criticized for his statements when Milan was spending so much, saying, I have no idea what they're doing, what the hell's going on over there. You know, he got a lot of crap in Italy over this. You know, a lot of people were saying, you know, he should mind his own business. Why is he talking about us? Roma's nothing compared to Milan. But I re-listened to the interview where he said that, and it was all in the context of FFP. He was being asked by some people that I know at SiriusXM, he's on there very often, on the effects of FFP on Roma, and he pointed out how inconsistent FFP is, and that's when the context in which he brought up Milan, and he got destroyed by the media. One of Milan's directors, Fassone, gave a long response, and I hate to say it, it turned out that Pallotta was right after all. You know, it turns out that someone like Pallotta that made a fortune in finance as a hedge fund manager and someone that owns a club and someone that's had to deal with FFP issues actually knows what they're talking about. Shocking. So yeah, I get it. If you're a Milan fan, maybe it rubbed you the wrong way that he was saying all these things about Milan. But I will tell you, in Italy, we need more people like this that are going to speak up, because the whole Milan sale, and we covered it ad nauseum in our special, there were a lot of red flags. And the problem is it was just let go. It was swept under the rug. And now, unfortunately, I have to tell you, for Milan, you know, all the expenditures that they made last year, you know, coming back to bite them. So I wish Milan the best. I really do. I'm still optimistic I'm still hoping that the outcome of this is that they do get new owners, because the ownership situation right now is simply unsustainable. So the best outcome for Milan is if they can somehow find new owners, you basically reset everything with FFP. The new owners would get an opportunity to present the plan. So I still believe that's the best outcome. I believe that's a better outcome than these current owners staying on if they can somehow refinance their debt. So, you know, it's possible that things are going to get worse before they get better for Milan. If I had to guess, that's what I think is going to happen. But I'm long-term optimistic because I still believe that a brand as strong as Milan's going to eventually land in the right hands.
And, you know, going back to Napoli, I love the way Napoli just did business. They got it over with. They got their manager immediately before the World Cup, before the summer happens. I like when squads do that. PSG did it with Thomas Tuchel. No, I'm not hinting at another club that's stalling. But I think that's the way to go. You get your manager in, and then you know what changes to make on the transfer market, especially when the World Cup is ahead, which obviously is quite the distraction. So I applaud Napoli for how they went about their business. So, David, this is our big winners and losers. The Serie A season is obviously over. We've been doing winners and losers every time for the specific weekends or rare midweeks of Serie A play.
Yeah.
But now we're doing our winners and losers of the season. So who do we got?
So let's start with Serie A as a whole. I mean, it really couldn't have been a better – I mean, the only way this season could have been better, in my opinion, for Serie A had Napoli won, playing that amazing style of football. It would have really ended the debate of it being a one-team league that plays boring and defensive football. So if you watch Serie A, you know that the boring and defensive in games is absolute bullshit, but – it really would have been nice to wrap that bow around it. We also had Roma progressing so well in the Champions League. So overall, if you're a Serie A fan, you're definitely a winner. If you're someone that covers Serie A, like you and me, Alex, now, or anyone else that has a site or writes about Serie A, like, thank the calcio gods, because it really couldn't have gone better. Of course, we have to start with Juve, seventh title in a row, Allegri being the first manager in Europe that has the double in the league, I think 4 years in a row, a record. I think Allegri, when you think about how his journey at Juve started after Conte resigned, were people throwing rocks at his car when he arrived, like, he's got to feel really good. I think Higuain's a winner in the sense that maybe it wasn't his best season scoring-wise, but he had two of the three biggest goals that Juve had this season, the goal at the San Paolo against Napoli back in December, and of course the goal against Inter. Sarri himself said that that's really what took the spirit out of Napoli. So he's a winner in that sense for me. Napoli's still a winner. As we mentioned at the top, no team in Serie A has gone to 91 points without winning the title. To me, Sarri's still a winner. His future's still uncertain. You know, it really kind of breaks my heart that it's almost 100% certain he won't be in Serie A next season, but he's made a huge name for himself. I think Koulibaly's a winner on Napoli. To me, he established himself as the best defender in Serie A at the moment. I'm going to just give him that title now. I think Jorginho as the brains behind Sarri ball and now making it finally to the Italian national team's a winner as well. For Roma, of course, Coach Di Francesco, I thought, ended up doing a really good job. It was a little bit of a, there was a rocky stretch in the middle of the season. Our friend John Solano, I think, tried to get rid of him a few times. But overall, he's got to be very happy with his first season in Rome. Goalkeeper Alisson, absolutely incredible season. More than lived up to the pressure of replacing Szczesny. He's the goalkeeper in Serie A at the moment. And another winner has to be Roma. Roma's social media team, amazing work. Shout out to them, and especially to one of my former colleagues, Gianmarco, who writes there, who's doing really amazing work. Inter back in the Champions League after 6 years. They have to be winners. Mauro Icardi, who our friend Matteo Bonetti named as the MVP of the Serie A season. If you didn't hear that interview on Monday, we recapped the whole season with Matteo. That was terrific. Another winner has to be Skriniar. I thought he was the best acquisition in Serie A. He's given a run to Koulibaly for the best defender in Serie A. And Spalletti is a winner too, because he finally did bring Inter back to the Champions League. On Lazio, it was a horrible way to end the season in such dramatic fashion, but they have to feel really good about their season overall. They kind of lost their minds in the Europa League, but they did well in that competition overall. Our boy Milinkovic-Savic, of course, a big winner this season, really made a name for himself. Ciro Immobile confirmed what a deadly striker he is in Serie A. And shout out to Lucas Vieira, who arrived from Liverpool on a free transfer, ended up being a great player for them. And I then have some random winners on other teams. I have Atalanta. I thought they did really well. Now, surprisingly, I think they're the team that lost, compared to last season, the most points in Serie A. I think they had 10 points less, but they had a great run in the Europa League. I think they have a fresh batch of very exciting young players that they'll be able to make a small fortune on. We want to give a shout out to their manager, Gasperini, as well. Huge winners is Spal as well. They hadn't been in Serie A for a ton of years. I'm sure people who are casual followers of Italian football didn't even know they existed. So shout out to them. They remained in Serie A in the last match of the season. Their striker, Antenucci, had over 10 goals. Led their way. He's a winner as well. And the last winner that I have, a little bit surprising because his team ended up in last place, is Benevento manager De Zerbi. I thought he really made a name for himself. I thought Benevento played really well. Feisty team, even when they were pretty much essentially relegated for the past few months of the season. On the flip side, and I hate to pick on Milan too much, so we're not going to start with them. Let's start with Hellas Verona, who I thought was the team coming from Serie B that I expected to be able to do the best in Serie A just because of their tradition. You looked at their squad. They started the year with Cerci and Cassano. Cassano retired even before the season started. Cerci wasn't much of a factor. Very disappointed in how Hellas Verona did. Today we had Donadoni being sacked. I thought Bologna underachieved. They were comfortably avoided relegation. I think a little bit more would have been expected from them. I think Donadoni, it's time for him to move on and time for Bologna to kind of start fresh. I think another loser is Belotti. A lot of expectations going in for him in the season. Granted, he battled injuries, so it's not totally his fault, but definitely took a step back this season, just like Domenico Berardi, who made it to the Italian national team. Mancini called him, but definitely he finished the season strong, but overall definitely took a step back. Definitely not a player you'd spend 40, 50 million euro at the moment here. And I hate to stick it to Milan fans after that opening, but they have to be ultimately the biggest losers of the season. You spend 250 million, I think that's what it is. They end up basically in the same spot in the standings, only 1 point more than last season. Sure, you can point to the fact that they did a lot better under Gattuso, but all those expenditures from last summer are really going to come back to bite them now. So they have to be listed as losers, both directors Fassone and Mirabelli. I mentioned on how Belotti and Berardi's brand definitely took a hit this year. You can definitely say that about Donnarumma too. He's had a very difficult year overall, still young enough and certainly has the talent to get it back on track. And Bonucci, I mean, you have to think at this point, you know, he'll probably never admit it, but he's got to really regret that move. I totally get that he had personal reasons why, if he really was dead set on Juve, that to stay in Italy. But that was definitely a move. And I think now he's going to be 30. He's 31 now. So, you know, he finds himself another season without the Champions League. He said he was going to shift the equilibrium in Serie A. Milan finds themselves in exactly the same position, and Juve find themselves in exactly the same position. So really didn't move much. But let's hope that for Milan, we'll be able to speak about them in higher terms. So those are my winners and losers for the season in Serie A. If I missed any, please let me know. And you can do that by using the CalcioLand hashtag. And that's how we get the vast majority of the questions on the podcast. I won't lie, sometimes I sneak in a question. I think you guys by now can figure out usually which those are. But we love getting questions from our listeners. We're in full bloom of transfer for season, so keep sending them in with the CalcioLand hashtag. And which ones are we going to go over tonight, Alex?
You know, speaking of sneaking questions in, I've never done that, but when I saw the report today that Roma is interested in Hakim Ziyech, I thought about it. But that'll be
you like him. He's let me get your take because I don't know much about him. Do you think Roma fans should be really excited if he comes?
If they play the right formation for him, absolutely. He is an immensely gifted distributor. He's 25, so he's not like all these Ajax products that are 19, 20, 21. He's kind of just been over there really playing great football. He's probably been the best player in the Eredivisie for a couple of years now, and now he's finally ready to leave. If Roma could do that and they could play the right formation for him because he is frail, I think they'd be getting a really damn good player. And I even said to Claudio on your DiMarzio staff, I would throw my allegiances to Roma if Ziyech goes there, and that's official. So
exciting.
I need something to tip me one way or the other. I will be a Roma fan if he goes there. That's on the record. But, David, let's get to maybe the, not million-dollar question, how about billion-dollar question? I've never heard of this manager. What's the latest on Maurizio Sarri?
So let me preface by this. We're recording this on Thursday night. Actually, right before we recorded, I contacted my colleagues on the Marzo site. I'm like, listen, guys, I got to go do the podcast. Keep your eye out because there could be an update on Sarri. So if we record this and it happens right after, please know we're recording this on Thursday. So as of now, the last report is what we posted on the Marzo site last night. I kind of gave you a preview yesterday earlier, Alex, because I had done some digging. So despite all the reports you read everywhere else, and I respect what everyone else does, it's very possible they were ahead of everyone else. Today is the first real official contact between Chelsea and Sarri. There's been the situation with Sarri at Napoli is so complex that I don't even think it's entirely accurate to say he was sacked, because Napoli, really, their first choice was to bring him back. I think De Laurentiis, and we had reported this last week on the Marzo site, and, you know, I'll put my face on this. We all thought Sarri was going to ultimately stay, but he didn't. He didn't respond to De Laurentiis in a timely manner. So De Laurentiis went ahead with Ancelotti. So the exit clause that Sarri has is really complex. The deadline was technically the 22nd for Napoli to be alerted that a team was going to pay it, but technically the payment is due on the 31st. So if you think that's all bullshit to say we don't know when this clause is, I wouldn't fault you, but that's how it was explained to me. So technically a team could still pay the clause, although Napoli has another manager. At the moment, they still have Sarri on the payroll. So Sarri is talking to Chelsea, but I really wouldn't underestimate the Zenit angle of this. And again, I get why everyone tells me, why in the world would Sarri go to Zenit when he can go to Chelsea? But again, he's a very peculiar guy. This isn't your average coach. So I wouldn't assume it's a slam dunk that he'd pick Chelsea over Zenit. They want to give him a really nice financial package. And again, remember, Mancini just coached them. So that at the moment are his two options for there. There might be more updates coming shortly, but as we're recording this, that's the latest that we have.
All right, this is the million-dollar follow-up question that I see so many people talking about on Twitter. David, should Sarri join Chelsea? Can we expect him to sign some of his former Napoli players?
So again, Napoli is a very peculiar place. De Laurentiis and Sarri are pretty peculiar guy, both stubborn guys. It doesn't sound like this is a very amicable breakup, as much as I'm sure there's a lot of respect for each other, in the sense that Napoli gave Sarri a huge platform. Sarri did very well for Napoli, but these are men that hold grudges. Chelsea fans remember how difficult Napoli was to deal with Koulibaly, and that was without potentially their former manager there. So I don't expect Napoli to make it any easier now. I also expect Napoli to want to keep a good amount of the key players for Ancelotti. 50-50. But there is a big but. There are some players on Napoli that have pretty reasonable exit clauses. So I want to stress this is completely hypothetical. I don't have news on it. We don't even know if Sarri is going to be the coach. But if you ask me what sounds realistic to me, it's not out of the question that if Sarri becomes the coach, he targets the players with the exit clause. So there's Ghoulam, expensive exit clause, but also one of the best left backs in Serie A. I know how much you love Marcos Alonso, Alex, so you wouldn't be that upset, I would imagine, if he comes in. Then the right back, Hizaj, who I think is quite good, much more of a defensive player than anything else. He also has an exit clause. Ghoulam, I think, is around 40 million. Hizaj, about the same. And then there's Albiol, an old school defender. Actually, I think he did quite well. He has a very low exit clause, someone very familiar with Sarri's style. And then there's Dries Mertens, of course, who ran out of gas at the end of the season, but he was really tremendous for a long time. Now, we did report on Di Marzio's side that Ancelotti would really like to keep Mertens, so let's see what happens there. We know Mertens loves the city of Naples, but if I was a Chelsea fan, those would be the types of players that I think are much more realistic than, say, a Koulibaly or a Jorginho or a Hamsik.
You just crushed a lot of hearts there. Once again, I know it was hypothetical.
But, hey, I want to be realistic. And again, I could be really wrong, but I just know how these people are, and I just don't see De Laurentiis wanting to help Sarri unless he really has to. And with an exit clause, there's not much he can do.
All right, so last thing on Sarri, David. One more time, what would Sarri bring to Chelsea in good and bad?
So I apologize to our listeners that have heard us go over this so many times, but I get a lot of questions on this, and this time of year we have a lot of people tuning in that normally wouldn't. So we're going to do it one more time. And I talked about this on Monday. Even Man United fans were asking me about Sarri. I think Sarri is like the wet dream of anyone that has a manager that plays defensive and boring football. You watch Sarri the way Napoli plays, and then you also see 91 points. You're like, oh my God, this is so exciting. It's so different than what we have. And look, tactically, I think Sarri's as good as it gets. His teams have such a distinct style, the high pressure, tight lines, quick passing, triangles to kind of create space. Like, Sarri really is the heir to Arrigo Sacchi, for those of you that are old like me. A lot of parallels to it. But a big but, the tactics and the beautiful football is just one aspect of the job, especially at a big club like Chelsea. Like, there's so much more. Like, I know, Alex, I read your tweets. I know you complain a lot about Chelsea not developing their youth. I think Sarri's been hit or miss at Napoli for that, and that's something De Laurentiis has criticized them a lot for. Diarra this season didn't play that much. Or Rog, who's highly rated Croatian player, barely played. Zielinski, that's one guy that I think Sarri has more confidence in, but he also had him at Empoli, so spotty record with that. Definitely lack of rotation at Napoli really, really hurt them. And lastly, handling the media. I mean, if you think Conte complains a lot, oh boy, let me introduce you to Sarri. Like, that dude could have a Virginia ham under each arm. He'd complain that he has no bread. He also doesn't speak English at all, but maybe that would be an advantage, and maybe he should have a translator that's actually really good at PR that would change things on the fly. So I always, people accuse me of being someone that always promotes Serie A people, like I have influence in getting clubs to sign someone, which I don't. But with Sarri at Chelsea, I do have some reservations, or at any big club for that matter. And this is coming from someone that absolutely adores Sarri.
I said today on Twitter, I'm 50-50 on it. I want him for the beautiful football, and I don't really want him for all the other stuff. So we'll certainly see what happens if he does join Chelsea. All right, David, let's move on. What are the odds Gonzalo Higuain is involved in a potential deal for Alvaro Morata?
So look, I try not to talk too much about the reports of others, but I almost have to wonder if this whole story of Higuain potentially going to Chelsea is really driven by the fact that Sarri was linked to them so much. And if you know Serie A, you know that Sarri and Higuain have a huge bond. Now, for a variety of reasons, I'd be absolutely shocked if Higuain left Juve. Like, the club made an enormous financial sacrifice to get him because they know how hard it is to get a classic number nine like that to come to Serie A. So I'd be very surprised, too, because Juve spent a lot on him. He has a huge amortized value left at Juve. And I don't say it just for Chelsea. I'd be very surprised if Higuain's not on Juve. And that's even if Morata comes back. And I think there's a pretty good chance of that happening. And again, my guess, and we've talked about it before, is if Morata goes back to Juve, it would probably be on a deal similar to the Cuadrado one. So a two-year loan deal with option. The reason teams do that is to spread out the payments over multiple years. Chelsea can't take a loss on him. His wages are also tremendous. That would be my guess if a deal gets done. I just don't see it as a swap with Higuain.
All right, fair enough. David, this is a really good question. If you were to pick Argentina's squad, would you take Higuain or Icardi?
So if I'm a Serie A fan, I'd take both, no questions asked. But if you told me I could only have one for this World Cup, I would go with Higuain. The reason I say that is also what I mentioned in the winners and losers segment. He's just been a lot more clutch than in years past. He's had two huge goals for Juve. The goal against Inter decided the Scudetto ultimately. So I'd like to see him get a chance at redemption. So if I had to pick, it would be him. Long term, yeah, Icardi. I mean, it's so hard to keep him off. But I also feel like Icardi, like at Inter, has it made because the team essentially plays for him, and you realistically wouldn't have that on Argentina. But in the next World Cup, Icardi's 25 now. I think he's definitely one of the strikers they can build around. I'd really love to see Icardi and Dybala as a duo moving forward for the World Cup. So I'm going to put you on the spot, Alex. Which one would you pick if you could have just one?
Oh, man. You know what? I like that you're taking Higuain because of the clutch goals this year, but I'm afraid if Gonzalo Higuain messes up in the World Cup, people are really going to come after him. And then also, just on merit, I Andrew Barker talked about it last time you spoke with him. It's crazy to think that if Icardi doesn't go to this World Cup, and it doesn't look like he's going to, he won't be at a World Cup until another 4 years from now, much later in his career. I would take Icardi, but it's really, really, really close in my opinion. So, David, let's stay on strikers. Let's say, hypothetically, Morata does go to Juve. Do you think Max Allegri would use Morata in the same role he used Mandzukic in the past season and a half?
So while we're on the Mandzukic subject, today Di Marzio linked him to Manchester United. As a Man United asked me about that, like, I'll tell you, if you've listened to the podcast, you know we ride for Mandzukic. This season, he wasn't as good. But what a warrior that guy always is. And in the Champions League, even this season, that guy is so clutch. So I think it'd be a big loss for Juve if he left. I do see Allegri would probably get pretty creative with Morata this time around. It actually was interesting because Mandzukic and Morata were at Juve together. Interestingly, Dybala seemed to play better with Mandzukic than with Morata. So it would be, and that was with two strikers up front. So assuming Dybala stay at Juve, it's going to be very interesting to see how Allegri would manage all that. I think if Juve brings back Morata, it's kind of more as him being the long-term heir to Higuain. But in the short term, it wouldn't surprise me if they kind of use him in that role on the wing, like kind of a jack of all trades.
He's certainly got good feet for a big striker. He actually does. All right, David, these are the kings of the Twitter question segment. What is the latest on Milinkovic-Savic and Alexandro?
Yep, so it wouldn't be a Calcio Land podcast if we didn't do this, but there are some updates. So today Di Marzio gave you a juicy update on Manchester United. So Fred's coming, and in the article it was highlighted not once but twice that Pogba's going to be a starter next season along with Fred. So I also kind of wonder who the source was on that report. I think you guys can figure that one out too. In any event, it sounds like Fred, Pogba, and Matic are going to be the starters. Di Marzio reported that, look, Manchester United definitely likes Milinkovic-Savic. That's no surprise. We've talked about it for ages on the podcast. But at the moment, they're not sure they want to spend $100 million on a player who wouldn't be guaranteed to be a starter since Fred, Pogba, and Matic are slated to be the starters there. So let's see what happens. I always felt the Milinkovic-Savic saga would take time just because I know Lazio is going to try to create a huge bidding war for him. But at least now everyone has confirmation that Manchester United are interested. Let's see what happens. I have a feeling Mendes is going to be involved with this deal as an intermediary, and that can only help Man United. As far as the Alexandro side of things, there's been a lot of upveal at his position at Juve. So we've had Asamoah, who's heading to Inter. That's not official yet, but everyone knows it's going to happen. Spinazzola suffered an injury to his knee. He's going to be out for a while. Now, Juve is linked to Darmian. It sounds there's a lot of momentum for him coming back to Juve, but they are pretty thin at the wing-back position. So today, Marotta, their executive director, did mention they might start working on an extension for Alexandro. You guys know I don't put much stock in these sorts of quotes, but Marotta is probably more forthcoming than most. And when you look at Juve's situation at the position, I could see why they would at least explore the possibility of an extension, but it's a long summer, so a lot can change. I want to stress that. But it's interesting to me that for the second summer in a while, Alexandro finds himself in a tough spot, because last year, Juve had lost Bonucci and Dani Alves. Losing a third starter would have been really rough. And this summer, which you could have felt, okay, maybe now's an ideal time for Alexandro to go, then all these injuries happen. So let's see what happens. This is the update as it stands now, but I'm sure some of these things are going to change as the summer goes. And one thing's for certain, we are going to be talking more and more about these two players.
You know, I know Man U fans, you guys got Fred today, nice player, but I told you a long time ago, Mourinho is not the special one. He's going to water down Fred. You got to get rid of Mourinho. Yeah, it sounds like I want every coach out, but this
you
guy.
Do.
But yeah, I do. But this guy, come on, he's done. He's done. He's done. Moving on, David. This is one of our biggest fans of the podcast. I'm assuming, actually. I'm just looking at the question. Adam Ahmed, I assume he sent this one in. He's an Inter guy, but he's a huge Eusebio Di Francesco fan. So without further ado, David, his question is, would Eusebio Di Francesco fit well in the Premier League?
So I'm assuming you don't, if you were a Roma fan, you wouldn't want Di Francesco out right now. You're not that crazy, Alex, right?
No.
Have some sanity left, right? I actually think Di Francesco is a very intriguing manager for the Premier League. Now, I do think he could really benefit, and he will stay at Roma almost certainly, at least 1 year or two more in Serie A. But I really look at his profile and the way he manages, pretty offensive football, plays a 4-3-3 most of the time. His teams play pretty fluid, solid on the back line. So I actually think he'd be someone that long-term would do really, really well in the Premier League. It also really helps that if you manage at Roma, you're under a ton of pressure, and he's managed that very well. So I could certainly see him in a year or two as someone really to watch for a top Premier League club.
All right, David, next one. Which players can Milan offload in the summer to allow for some summer spending, seeing the recent UEFA ruling?
So, you know, I don't want to speculate too much because we need to really get more details on all this. But the two logical names are, you know, Donnarumma, who, you know, we had a report today on Di Marzio's side that he really wants to stay at Milan. But with Pepe Reina coming in, I've always said from the get-go, I would be very surprised if Pepe Reina was leaving Napoli. And when he agreed to join Milan was with Sarri still there to go be a backup. But Donnarumma's market, and we talked about it recently, you know, it's really evolving. His performances weren't the best last season. Buffon at PSG takes away one possibility there. Alisson's the big name. But there's still a market for Donnarumma. I mean, I could see a team like Liverpool would love to have a keeper like that for a very long time. And the other one, Suso, who has that 40 million exit clause. To me, Suso's a little bit like Alexandro. A few months ago, or a year ago, you would have been like, oh my God, this is such a huge loss. But under Gattuso, Suso wasn't that great. I actually think Calhanoglu and Bonaventura are better fits under Gattuso. So to me, if you can then spend some money and replace and use those assets to replace players, and that remains to be seen to see what the ruling is, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if those two were to go. The other players that have value, I don't think you'd want to lose, like Romagnoli, who I think has been really good this season. When you consider his age, that's one player that if I was Milan, I'd try to hold on no matter what. If I had to pick between keeping Romagnoli and Bonucci, if it came game for that. It's a very easy decision. I keep Romagnoli. So that's the answer. But again, let's not speculate too much. Let's see. Once we get more details, we can talk more about it.
All right, David, next question. This is an interesting one. What are the odds Atlanta United star Miguel Almiron joins the Serie A team this summer?
And this kid's really impressive, man. I've always said, you know, the stuff that Ibrahimovic is getting all the attention, taking away from what's going down in Atlanta. They got a lot of young, exciting players, and Miguel Almiron's one of them. I think he's 24 years old, been one of the best players in MLS. I've heard from good sources that Fiorentina are exploring the or monitoring him. If they were to sell Chiesa for a huge fee, I actually think Almiron would be quite a nice replacement for him. So I'd love to see him in Serie A. At the moment, I would say that Fiorentina could be a good fit if Chiesa goes.
That would be great for the MLS, too, if he came over to Serie A and succeeded. That would be awesome. All right, this is a really cool question just because of our ties to Boston and the NBA playoffs right now. David, who is the equivalent of Brad Stevens in Serie A?
It's a great question. Really, really great. Go Celtics. I almost want to crank call John Solano right now and talk trash, but we won't. So this is a tough one. And look, there's no equivalent because I don't think there's really an equivalent for Brad Stevens. Definitely not in the NBA, there's hardly in any sport. But I tried to think about the criteria that make Brad Stevens so great. And you can tell me, Alex, if I'm on track or not. So Brad Stevens is known for being incredibly creative. Every time the Celtics come out of a timeout, if they have the ball, they're going to come up with like a really nice play. Brad Stevens is a junkie and a basketball junkie. He's always watching games. He's picking up plays. So he's great at those. He's fantastic at setting up his players to succeed. Like, his job as a coach is to highlight their strengths, set them up so those strengths can shine and minimize their mistakes. The other thing about Brad Stevens that really stand out to me is once a player leaves the Celtics, they almost always look much worse on their new teams. We've seen that time and time again. I'm a huge Celtics fan. I almost wonder if you put Rozier or even Marcus Smart on another team, would they be as good? So when I look at these criteria, the closest that I could think in Serie A, and I think this is going to surprise a lot of people, is Gasperini on Atalanta. Very smart tactically, plays nice offensive football, comes up with some pretty good ideas. He's kind of the Sarri stopper. Gasperini had his number, really knew how to manage against him. And just like when a player leaves the Celtics, when a player leaves Gasperini's teams, and we saw that at Genoa, and we're seeing it especially now at Atalanta, their form takes a big drop. So that's my pick. If our listeners have a better one, please let me know, but that's the one that I could come up with.
I like that one a lot because the Celtics are kind of overachievers right now in a great way, and Atalanta, you could argue, really overachieves. So that's a pretty good comp in my opinion. So David, let's move away from football. Last Twitter question. Who is better in concert between Liam and Noel Gallagher?
Awesome. So great question. And this actually came from me because I've seen both the Oasis guys this year. I saw Noel, which was my second time in February. I saw Liam just a few weeks ago. So I'm a big Oasis fan, as are a lot of our listeners. So this is kind of tough for me. And I'll tell you, in general, I've been going to a ton of concerts, and there's such an advantage to when you have the original voice from the song. So to give you an example, Roger Waters of Pink Floyd probably puts on the best concerts visually, has amazing band. It sounds amazing. The experience is just incredible if you go to his shows. But on the songs where he doesn't have David Gilmour, where David Gilmour sings the lead, it almost feels like a karaoke concert. And that's kind of how it feels like a little bit when you go to Noel Gallagher show. And granted, he does a lot of his own songs, but when he gets into the Oasis ones, you're like, oh, something's missing here. I love Noel. I think he's probably one of the best songwriters alive, but he's really not a front man. He's really more of a side kind of guy. So I really enjoy his concerts, but it's you feel like there's something missing. So I saw Liam a couple of weeks ago. So it starts off with some Oasis songs, and the first few times you're like, wow, you really feel like you're on an Oasis show from the 90s. I think his solo material is actually surprisingly better than I would have expected from him. So it's a good experience as well. But I will say the thing that stands out to me about Liam, which I was surprised, like he's definitely a good front man because he definitely gets your attention. He does his pose with the microphone. He's got the voice. But you really get the sense that he's punching the clock and he's just trying to get through the show. I saw him at, a couple of weeks ago. He barely played an hour. It was good, but kind of left you wanting for more. His opening act, which I have to say blew me away, Richard Ashcroft from The Verve, almost played longer than he did. And at that show, I almost left enjoying his part more than Liam. So it's kind of the long and short of it is that I'd love to see Liam and Noel back together because they really complement each other perfectly. I think if you go to either of their shows, you'd have a good time. If you want more of an Oasis experience, you're getting that with Liam. With Noel, you're getting more of his solo stuff. So there's definitely a lot to be said for both. So those are the questions for today. Please send them in more with the Cultureland hashtag. I want to take this opportunity to ask you to support the podcast. If you're listening to us on iTunes, you can do that by subscribing, by leaving us a 5-star review. It will literally take you 2 seconds. If you want to leave us a comment, we read them all, and I really appreciate your support. And now we're going to get into previewing the Champions League final. So for the first interview of the podcast today, we are going to cover the Champions League final. I was a little bit on the fence on this, but I do think there are some storylines that really connect to Serie A and transfers as well. So I am thrilled that we are joined to hear the Liverpool side of things with our good friend Steve Hoare, who for the Liverpool side of his business, you can see him on Redmond TV. At the end of the podcast, we're going to hear a little bit more on what they do there. So, Steve, welcome to Cultureland. It's a real pleasure to speak to you this evening.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Terrific. So as Liverpool, we're recording this on Thursday. The final's coming up very, very soon. Before we get into what we're going to see in Kiev, I wanted to ask you, we had a semifinal match against Roma. You know, we cover Serie A. We were very surprised to see them get that far. It was certainly exciting. So we wanted to get your take on what stood out to you in that match, more on the Roma angle of things and how you think Liverpool were able to defeat them.
Yeah, I was actually very surprised with the manager and the tactics he employed at Anfield. He went with his back three. He played a very, very high line. And I don't know you guys, I don't think the Roma defence has got much pace in it. So basically, Liverpool scored, I think, 3 of the 5 goals by literally just knocking a ball over the top. I thought that was a very strange tactical setup. And looking back on it, I imagine he's sitting there thinking, that's probably what cost him a place in the final. The decision just to let Sadio Mane and Mo Salah and Roberto Firmino have acres and acres of space to run into. That was the first thing when I was watching the game that sprung to my mind.
Yeah. So one player that you mentioned is Salah, of course. We're very familiar with him in Serie A. I have to be honest, as someone that was a big Salah believer, I had a strong feeling he'd do well at Liverpool. I know he felt like he had some unfinished business in the Premier League and really wanted to prove himself. But I will tell you, just as I was shocked that Roma made it to the semifinal, I was quite surprised that Salah has been as dominant as he has this season. So tell me a little bit what you expected when he arrived and the impact he ultimately had for your squad this season.
Yeah, looking back now, it sounds crazy considering what he's become. But at the time, I genuinely thought that we were just signing a guy who was there in case Sadio Mane got injured, because the season before, Sadio Mane was Liverpool's best player and he missed a large portion of the season. He went away to Africa to play for Senegal, and then he got a serious knee injury playing against Everton, and we were without him for the running of the season, and Liverpool really struggled. So I thought we were getting another guy who, if Mane was unavailable, just let us have a bit of pace out wide. I didn't know how much he was going to play, to be honest, but obviously looking back now, that's ridiculous, because he's played every game and he's pretty much scored in every single one of those games as well. So the shock, it's absolutely a shock. I mean, like I said, I saw a lot of him at Roma and I knew he had goals and assists in his game, but the numbers that he's hit, you know, scoring over 40 goals, double-digit assists, it's like, those numbers are like what Lionel Messi hits and what Cristiano Ronaldo hits. Normal human beings don't never do that. And it's just been out of this world. He's the best signer Liverpool have ever made, certainly as long as I can remember watching the Reds play. He's an absolute superstar, and I think he gets talked about in Ballon d'Or conversations.
Yeah.
That isn't out of this world. He has been that good.
So another player I wanted to ask you about is Emre Can. So we've linked it heavily to Juve. I have a feeling that's going to be announced shortly after the final. So I wanted to get your take. You followed him quite a while at Liverpool. So if you have to describe him to someone who's only seen him a little bit, or maybe someone who hasn't seen him at all, how would you describe Emre Can as a player?
He's very dynamic, very physical. It's actually very disappointing that he's going to leave, actually. I think it's a big blow to Liverpool, and that when we first signed him from Leverkusen, he was very raw and he made a lot of mistakes in Liverpool. We almost had to put up with the teething problems almost that you get by having a young developing player. And Liverpool stuck by him. They constantly played him. You know, two managers had faith in him to play him. And before he got injured earlier this season, he was very much in Jurgen Klopp's plans, and that's why I'm quite surprised he's leaving, because it obviously isn't for game time, because he was getting picked every week. You know, he's captained Liverpool at various stages this season. I can only imagine it might be something to do with the money. Or like I say, he maybe fancies going and playing in Serie A for Juventus, which, you know, fair enough. They're the best team over there, so maybe that's what it is. But in terms of what Juventus are going to get, they're going to get a very dynamic player, a very direct player, a very physical player. And what he's done this season, guys, he started adding goals to his game as well. So he was arriving at the back post a lot, scoring tap-ins. He was getting on the end of headers and stuff. So he's developed from a deep-lying defensive midfielder to very much a box-to-box guy who began to add goals to his game before, like I say, he got injured.
You know, by the way you describe him, it almost sounds exactly what Juve has been lacking for a while. Like, obviously, they made him a great offer financially. Usually players on free transfers, especially young ones like him, are going to get really a great, you know, wage. But I think it goes beyond the fact, too, he knew he'd be a starter at Juve. You look at the rest of their midfield, and he could see being a long-term player there. So I can kind of understand his decision. I can understand why, too, as a Liverpool fan, you're a little bit disappointed to see him go. So let me ask you, let's focus a little bit more on the actual game itself. If you were to decide which Liverpool player is the most important player going in, so if you could, if someone told you after the fact this Liverpool player was the player of the game and Liverpool ended up winning, who do you think that player would be? Who do you see as someone that can be really the difference maker?
I think if Roberto Firmino plays 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10 type game, then I think Liverpool will win. I think if he has a poor game, I think Liverpool will lose. I think he's the main man for us in the final for sure. Not just obviously his goal record speaks for itself, it's fantastic, but all the work he does, he'll be the guy who's asked to disrupt Luka Modric and Toni Kroos. He'll be the guy who's running around those guys, putting them under pressure, not giving them a second. So for me, I know obviously Mo Salah's got all the plaudits this season, and rightly so. He's been absolutely fantastic, but I think if you take Roberto Firmino out of Liverpool, they are a very, very, not average team, but I think they are a very average attack. I don't think we'd have seen what we've seen from Mo Salah and from Sadio Mane if it wasn't for the selflessness of Firmino. So I think he's our key player.
Interesting. So this is my opinion, and I'm not as well-versed in Liverpool or Real Madrid for that matter. Certainly not as well-versed as you are with Liverpool. For some reason, I'm adamant that Liverpool, had it been over two legs, I would say Liverpool would probably have less of a chance. I think in one match, they have a little bit more of an edge. So tell me if you agree with that, and ultimately what you think your prediction for the match is going to be.
Yeah, I do agree with that, because every round up to this point, Liverpool have pretty much won in one game. So Liverpool won 5-0 and that tie was put to bed. They play Manchester City at home, win 3-0, that tie is put to bed. They play Roma at home and win 5-2, and that's pretty much that tie is put to bed as well. I know it got a little bit closer in terms of scoreline in Rome, but Liverpool were pretty much comfortable all the way through, I thought. Obviously, two of those Roman goals came very, very, very late. So Liverpool can blow any team away in 30 minutes. And like I say, over in terms of one game, I agree, it definitely suits us in that it just lessens the time that Real Madrid can come back if Liverpool do what they do. In each of those games I've mentioned, Liverpool have scored three goals in the space of 30 minutes. So if they can do something like that to Real Madrid where they just go bang, 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 my hope is that that happens at some stage and that Madrid just don't have the time to come back into the game because, like I say, Roma, over two legs, nearly did it, but over one leg, they never had a chance. So that is what I hope happens. Again, maybe my heart ruling my head, but I think both teams will score. It could be anything. You could say this game could be 4-4 penalties, and that would be a surprise because both sides just attack so well. Prediction wise, I've been saying 4-2 to Liverpool, but again, maybe that's just my heart over my head.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, and I'm going to say the same to our Real Madrid guest in a little bit. I'm kind of a little bit bullish on Liverpool, too. So, Steve, it was a pleasure talking to you. Tell our listeners what they can expect if they go to Redmond TV and see your work there. What types of content are you guys doing over there?
Yeah, I Paul and Chris, the guys who run Redmond TV, and I'm one of the contributors as well. If you go over to the YouTube channel now, they had 45 minutes with Jamie Carragher, which anyone can see now. In terms of, there's tons of build up to the Kiev final as well, like, as you'd imagine. The guys are traveling over there themselves, so they'll be documenting their journey. So I do. If anyone's interested, by all means, go and follow the guys. It's at the Redmen TV, and I'm sure they'll keep you entertained.
I want to thank you so much for joining us, Steve. I wish you best of luck in the match, and I look forward to chatting with you. You know, during the summer, we cover a lot of transfers. I'm sure Liverpool are going to come up, so I look forward to chatting with you about that in the future. So thanks so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay, and after getting the Liverpool side of the equation in the Champions League final, we are going to get the Real Madrid side. Real Madrid side, with your returning champion, you go last to top it off. So we are joined to get this perspective by Kian Subani. He is the chief editor of the excellent Managing Madrid account. He's also a regular contributor on 442. So, Kian, it's a real pleasure to speak to you. Thank you so much for joining us on Calcio Land this evening.
Hey, David. Thank you. Appreciate you having me on. Look forward to chatting.
Awesome. So let's start with this. So not only do we have Real Madrid dominating in the Champions League in recent years, I will stick up for Serie A and say the last team that's really eliminated you guys is Juve under Allegri. Other than that, you guys have dominated. But beyond Real Madrid in general, Spanish teams just dominate in European competition. So I wanted to get your take on this. What is the secret to Spanish teams doing so well in the Champions League and Europa League, in your opinion?
First of all, I still have nightmares about that Morata goal, so thank you for reminding me about that. this question is so interesting, and you almost need to analyze it from a few different ways, and it's going to have twists and turns. One of the main answers you can think of is that just go back and look at the Ballon d'Or for the last, like, 800 years. Both of them have been in La Liga. And that kind of level of having that level of player makes a difference. And so that's a huge part of it. But I think also it's interesting that I think this will shift eventually if it hasn't already, because you look at you used to be able to say, well, the coaching was great in La Liga. I mean, you look at the Premier League managers now, they're basically all the La Liga managers from, you know, 5-6 years ago, whether it's Guardiola and Mourinho to Pellegrini, Pochettino, like all these guys. Emery is there now. So
yeah,
I think this will change. And I think if you give a guy like Guardiola enough money and enough time, he's eventually going to crack Europe. But I think also the scouting has been terrific in La Liga. Like, if you go down the list of, like, almost every team in Spain, every one of those teams has, like, a standout player that has just come out of nowhere, and we didn't know about them like 2 years ago. The scouting has been good. I also think, like, you know, you look at England, they play, what, 4 competitions now? It's going to be hard to focus. You need to have a really deep roster, and Real Madrid had that. Like, Zidane was fielding 2 starting 11s, basically, like, just rotating through them. And by the end of the final, someone like Ronaldo had a bunch of rest. Modric, an older player, had a bunch of rest. And now you kind of see like a little mini resurgence with Serie A. Like, I was happy to see Inter get back in. Napoli now with Carlo, like, you know, although Sarri was a great coach too. I think it'll shift. I think a lot of it has to do with money, obviously, but the parity in the Premier League also is a bit more than La Liga, I think, if you ask me. And that means it's more competitive and it's tough to win. So naturally, it's hard to focus on multiple competitions. You kind of just have to pick your poison.
So you mentioned Ancelotti, so I wanted to ask you this. So let's pretend we are having this conversation back in 2014. Let's jump on the time machine. After Real Madrid wins La Decima, Carletto's at the top of the world. If I told you then that 4 years later, Ancelotti would be at Napoli, what would have been your reaction?
I think it would be even more crazy if you told me the path, which is in a year from now, he'll be fired from Real Madrid after winning the first Champions League for Real Madrid in like 12 years. And then he goes to Bayern and gets fired mid-season in his second year. And now he's in Napoli. I think that would have even shocked me more than just hearing that. I remember at the same time, David, I don't know if it would shock me, because being a Real Madrid fan, we went through like 10, 12 years of just shuffling through managers like 2-3 in a season at some point after Del Bosque was fired. So we knew like the standard and what it is. And, you know, you obviously know Fabio Capello very well. Both stints at Real Madrid, he won the league and they kicked him out. And so to answer your question, I'm surprised and also not surprised, because I just remember how Real Madrid do things. The standard is very high. Kind of unfair, but that's the reality.
Excellent. So let's transition into the game a little bit. So one of the storylines that I'm reading a lot is how much Liverpool wants it more. Real Madrid's been there, done that. Liverpool's kind of the team of the moment. They have a lot of momentum, but I have a feeling this is just half the story. I think, you know, a club like Real Madrid that's done so well, to me, it's kind of like the equivalent of Juve in Serie A, at least. Like, when you win so often, it's like almost more about the fear of not winning and have someone else win it. So tell me a little bit about the motivations of the team going in. Do you think on the Real Madrid side, there's as much hunger and drive as you would imagine there being on the Liverpool side?
Well, it was interesting because 2 days ago, Real Madrid had their open media day. So they basically opened, you know, all the players and the coaches, they all did interviews and there was a bunch of questions. And one of the interesting things that Zidane said was that no one can say that Liverpool are more hungry than us. And I believe him, because there's no way that Real Madrid can lose this game. Like, we can talk about Liverpool's hunger because they haven't won in a while. But also, if Real Madrid don't win this, the season is a failure for them. Like, let's be clear, they've been absolutely abysmal domestically. It's not a good season. Like, this run in Europe is masking a lot of problems that the team has tactically. And if they don't win it, the pressure not to win is crazy. So I believe Zidane when he says the team is hungry. I don't think Liverpool are more hungry, based on that.
Yeah, I certainly agree, because that's kind of what I see too with Juve, like a team that just wins so much. It's like the fear of failure is almost more of a driver than the happiness that you get from success. So I wanted to get your take. So it seems another storyline that pops out a lot, and I think it has to do with the quality of the players and all the momentum that Salah has. So the matchup between Marcelo and Salah, two outstanding players, it seems like an intriguing matchup. So I wanted to get your take on that one. And if you think there's another duel on the pitch that is equally important that you're looking at.
Well, like you said, the most, I guess, talked about matchup on the entire field is Salah versus Marcelo. And I've seen a couple people try to like say on Twitter, that this may not be a huge issue, but it is. It's like, this is absolutely the most glaringly obvious weakness that Real Madrid have. Not that Marcelo himself, kind of like in a vacuum, is weak. He's arguably the greatest offensive wing back of all time, but defensively he is who he is. And it's not necessarily his fault, but Zidane has failed to create a system that covers for him adequately. So throughout this disastrous domestic campaign, we've seen We've seen Marcelo be exploited a ton. We've seen Casemiro not be able to cover for him because he's out of position. We've seen Kroos not be able to cover for him because he's out of position.
Yeah.
And Zidane rarely plays. Zidane likes this diamond. You know this. But, and the problem with the diamond is that it just has no presence on the flanks also to cover for Marcelo. And if you remember that Juve game, in that first half, Juve gave Real Madrid's wingbacks a bunch of problems. And then Zidane made that change. He brought in Asensio at halftime. And Asensio started to help a bit by covering for Marcelo on the left flank. And that helped a little bit. And I think that is an issue. And if Zidane doesn't address it, and also, like, because you look at Mohamed Salah's goals against Roma, against City, like over and over again, it was these passes to Salah, like at the halfway line, exploiting a high line. And he would either score from there or eventually just pass it to someone. So I do think that is a huge problem and probably the biggest problem that Zidane really has to figure out.
So let me put you on the spot. I have a feeling I have a pretty good idea of what you're going to pick. So tell me how you think this game is going to end up and why.
I don't like answering this question, but I will because I've been asked it on your podcast. But if someone put a gun to my head and asked me what the score will be, I guess I'll say Real Madrid wins 3-1. But I would not be surprised if that bullet went through my head and I got it wrong. It's really, really hard to predict this one. I don't know, because, you know, two really great teams, and as cliche as it is, but it's really hard to predict.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone is predicting a high-scoring game. It wouldn't be out of the question. It's up 1-0. Just you never know in these huge matches. So listen, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. So tell our listeners where your content is and what sorts of things you like working on and what our listeners can read from you if they look at your account and follow your work.
Sure. On the odd chance that anyone actually liked listening to me today, you can find me on Twitter at Kianso, KIYANSO. I do work for 442 and Managing Madrid. And if you go on either side right now, you'll find a couple articles previewing the Champions League final from a tactical perspective, if you're interested in catching up on those. And yeah, feel free to catch me on Twitter.
Well, Kian, it was really an absolute pleasure chatting with you. You know, we cover a lot of transfers. I'm sure Real Madrid were going to be in the middle of that. So I hope you'd be interested in coming back on the podcast to talk about that. In the meantime, I want to wish you best of luck in the final. And thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks so much, David. It was fun. Appreciate it.